Great message.
Right. We would turn to Genesis chapter 36. And as our Sunday school teacher said, we're not going to get to Joseph today. We are going to concentrate on the descendants of Esau, some of the descendants of Esau. And there's studying through this. There's, I thought maybe we might try to get to chapter 37 today, but we're not. There's going to be plenty to look at here in chapter 36. If you remember the last couple times, we saw where Jacob had and his family, his very large family now, and all his servants and his animals, his herds and flocks, and have all left where his father-in-law was, where he had lived there for a short time, for the scripture says about 20 years. They have journeyed back to Canaan, the land of promise, where his father and mother were living. His father has passed away. His most loved wife, Rachel, has passed away. She dies shortly after childbirth, after having his last son. Now, some of what we're going to look at today kind of overlaps what we've already looked at. Some of these things that we're going to look at with Esau and his generations has already taken place in this story. Some of it is to come. If you remember, back in chapter 33, I believe it is, when Jacob and Esau met again after when Jacob was coming back, in verse 16, chapter 33, verse 16, it says, "So Esau returned that day on his way unto Seir," but that's where he had been residing. Seir was in the land of Edom, or what would become the land of Edom. It was not called Edom until, at least from what I understand, it was not called the land of Edom until Esau and his descendants took over the land. And they basically not necessarily stole it, but as we'll see later, they married into the people that were there. And if you remember, Esau from the very beginning has defied the Lord in everything that he's done, for the most part. He's been, it's kind of an odd story, because Esau, being the firstborn, was supposed to be the one given the birthright from his father, which he was cheated out of that by his brother Jacob. His mother had a hand in that. His mother understood. As a matter of fact, his mother, remember, had been told by the Lord that the younger was going to be older, speaking of Jacob and Esau. And she had a hand in Jacob stealing the birthright. He also stole the blessing from his father in that same, not at the same time, but because of the same way of how things played out there. And if you remember, Jacob originally left his mother and father to go look for a wife, but he also left running away from his brother because his brother had threatened to kill him. Now he's married. He's actually got four wives. He's married two sisters, Leah and Rachel, and they both had given him their maidens, their handmaidens, as wives to have children with. So he's had children with all four wives. Now Esau, on the other hand, when he married if you remember when he first married, he married outside the family. He's the first generation to marry outside the family. The Lord had made it very clear to Isaac and his family that they were, the sons were to marry within the family, as did Isaac. And that goes all the way back to Abraham. Abraham did the same thing. Esau, on the other hand, sought the daughters of the land of Canaan and married at least two we know of, and possibly more, and if you see there in 36, chapter 36, verse 2, you see that he had, he married a Hittite woman, a daughter of the Hittites, and a daughter of the Hivites. These were two of the nations that were in Canaan at the time. Now, so that part, remember, takes place before. So, like I said, it kind of goes back and forth here. Some of this takes place beforehand. Some of it takes place at the same time as what we've been talking about. It all kind of runs together. It's just that the Lord stops, and for a whole chapter, he catches us up with the descendants of Esau. So notice in verse 1, in Genesis 36, verse 1, he says, "Now these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom." And we've already seen that. The Lord has given Esau the name Edom. Now, there's many different sayings, different thoughts on this name Edom. Some say it means red in the original languages, in different languages, depending on which how far back you go in the scriptures as far as translations. But it always refers to red. Some say it's because of the red lentil soup that his brother fed him when he came back from hunting. And remember, he was starved and almost starved to death because he hadn't had anything to eat while he was out hunting. And he comes back and Jacob has made a soup out of red lentils. Some say it's because of that. Some say it's because Esau was a red-headed man. And remember, the Bible tells us that he was a very hairy man. I would tend to believe that because, and maybe it's both. You know, I don't know. We do know that he did feed him red lentil soup, but why would the Lord name him after a soup and not after what his physical appearance was? Oftentimes, the Lord named a man because of his physical appearance. So it could be both. I'll put it that way. But we do know that he was, physically speaking, he was very hairy and had red hair. So, according to history, his descendants were known for that. It didn't just stop with him. His descendants were known for that same appearance. Now Esau took his wives of the daughters of Canaan, Ada the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and Aholibamah, the daughter of Anna, the daughter of Zibeon the Hivite, and Beshmeth, Ishmael's daughter, sister of Nebajoth. So he married into the family of Ishmael, his grandfather's brother. Half-brother, or we should say, the man who his descendants have caused much evil in that land over there, even today. So he marries into everything, every family around except for his own family where the Lord commanded him to. And we're going to see later, we're going to go to the book of Jeremiah later this morning, and we'll see where the descendants of Esau eventually pay for all this. It's almost, some refer to it as a generational curse. I don't know if that's what you would call it or not, because it's many, many generations later before that happens. But things don't turn out good for the descendants of Esau or Edom. And then we see, and I'm not going to go through and read all these names. We'll touch on some, but we see where his wives have bare sons unto him, and in verse 6, we see, and Esau took his wives and his sons and his daughters, so he's had sons and daughters by these wives, and all the persons of his house, all his servants, all his cattle and all his beasts and all his substance, which he had got in the land of Canaan, and went into the country from the face of his brother Jacob. So now Jacob's back with all his people and his animals. There's one of the commentaries I was reading on this. They were saying that it's similar to Abraham and Lot. They come into the land. They're both in the land. The land can't support them. That's how large their flocks and their herds are. And that's common sense. You know, that's something that would have happened. The land can't support both of them. And so, why does Esau leave? Shouldn't he have stayed since he was the older son? Well, no, because he doesn't have the birthright. He's forced to leave, basically. You notice there's no mention here of the two brothers talking this over. Esau just voluntarily goes. Remember with Abraham and Lot talked about it. And Abraham gave Lot the first choice. And what did Abraham do? He chose where the grass was greener on the other side of the fence, didn't he? Basically, that's an old saying we have here. People think things look better on somewhere else than they do where they're at. It didn't turn out so good for Lot. But it was because Abraham had been promised the land of Canaan, and Lot had not. That's why. In this case, it's the same situation. You've got two brothers. Now, Abraham and Lot were not brothers. They were uncle and nephew. But if you also notice, I believe if we were to research this out deep enough, you would see that some of the wives that Esau has married into, some of the families he has married into, were very possibly some of the same families that were involved in what happened in Lot's day, because they would have come from the same part of the world. So he's married into wickedness. He is not married into godliness. Esau, of course, has had the same upbringing as Jacob. He's been brought up in a godly home by Isaac and Rebekah. So he knows the truth. So he has no excuse. But he's acted on his own. He has rebelled against God. Just because his birthright's been stolen does not mean that he is to forsake God, does it? Just because we've been wronged, whether it's by a relative, family member, or a church member, or whatever, that doesn't give us the right to go out and do something wrong, does it? It doesn't give us the right to go out and rebel against God. And that's what Esau has done here. He has gone out, and over again, he rebels against God. Now, we also know Jacob has not been perfect either, but as far as the promise is concerned, Jacob has followed the Lord to keep that promise, to keep his side of the promise. He's married into the right family. He's gotten children. He's got 12 sons now and a daughter. But his 12 sons are going to be the 12 tribes that God has promised would be the descendants, the heirs to Israel. So Esau goes out it says he went into the country from the face of his brother. He gets as far away as he can from Jacob. I meant to bring a map up here to show you where Edom is, but it's kind of southeast of Israel. I don't know if I've got a map. Yeah, I've got a map here, but it's too small for the camera. But if you were to look at a map of, especially of the kingdom period of Israel and Judah, you would know that Edom was south, southeast of Israel and of the Dead Sea. It bordered on Moab and the wilderness, part of the wilderness that Israel that traveled through and during the Exodus was part of Edom, what's referred to as the Eastern Desert, which is part of Jordan, Saudi Arabia. All that is all part of what was Edom. So that's where Esau goes and settles with his family. Now remember, there's already a people there. He's not going to a land that's just wide open. There's already a people there. And at this point in time, remember, all this is the western side of the Fertile Crescent. We've talked about in the past. This is a very fertile area, at least up until this point. So it wouldn't make any sense for a man like Esau, who's been brought up by Isaac knowing the ways of agriculture, why would he go out to the desert? He wouldn't do that. Where he went was a very fertile place. There's several, if you could see a map, there's several rivers. Now, granted, the Dead Sea has already begun to form in that part of the world, because this is way after Sodom and Gomorrah, the destruction of the cities of the plains. But you've got all that south of there that's still fertile land. There's not been the wars that have taken on since. We've talked about that before, how there was a time when two nations would fight, the winner would come in, and instead of, if they didn't want to possess the land or they couldn't possess the land for whatever reason, they would go in and wipe out all of the trees and all the grass and crops, everything, and it would change the whole ecosystem. And it would just turn into a desert. And a lot of that's what happened in that part of the world. Even with the Promised Land, remember, it was supposed to be a land of milk and honey. And after all the wars that were fought over there, especially after Babylon came into to play over there, it became a pile of rocks and dirt. Now, verse 7, for their riches were more than they that might dwell together, and the land wherein they were strangers could not bear them because of their cattle. So they couldn't, as I said, they couldn't live in the same place. They had to separate. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. Again, God reminds us, Esau is Edom. Chapter 32. Is that right? Yeah, chapter 32 and verse 1, and we'll read a few verses here. And Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's host," and he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. So this was when Jacob was coming back into the land, a few chapters back. And he sent messengers to his brother. Remember, he was scared. He was afraid that his brother was going to try to come out and kill him again. Esau was living in the land of Seir. There was the land of Seir, and he also got the mountain of Seir. There was two different places. They were in the same land, but one was the land, the country, if you will. The other was the mountain. The mountain was actually where he lived, but it was inside the land of Seir. And it says the country of Edom. This is God telling us, giving us a point here where this place is located. So it wasn't called Edom yet, but it would be eventually because of, and real soon, okay? We'll see as we go through this chapter, in chapter 36, that all this is taking place at the time that it's written, actually. So all these things that with Esau's family, these are, even though it says his descendants, these are his children and grandchildren. They're not further down the line in many years to come. These are right now, right then, right? This happens right then. This happens at the time that from the time that Jacob comes back into the land to when Esau and his family set up things in Edom for their own purposes. There's already, as we'll see, there's already kingdoms there. There's already kings. There's cities there. They intermarry with all those people. And they, as they begin to intermarry with them, they begin to take over the land. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. That's verse 8 in chapter 36. Verse 9, and these were the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites in Mount Seir. So again, we see where he lives specifically. And then these are the names of Esau's sons. And we see the names of his sons by each wife. And I'm not going to read all these names. You see, if you'll pay attention and study this, you'll see where some of these names you see again later, especially in the history of Israel, once Israel has occupied the land. Some of these names come back to haunt Israel. If we skip down to verse 14, you see his second. He's got two wives here. So in verse 10 through 13, you see the sons of Bashemath. You got the son of Ada. Then if you go down, verse 12, you see a concubine that he had. You see, back to verse 11, you see the sons of Eliphaz, another wife. He's got several wives here. Verse 13, and these are the sons of Reuel. So you have those sons. And then in verse 14, now, some of these, from what I understand, some of these names that we see here are the sons of not just his wives, but the same thing happened with Esau as happened with Jacob. His wives gave him their handmaidens to marry. So when he talks about his concubines, he talks about some others. These were not actually women that he originally married, but they were their handmaidens that they had given to him to have more children with. And so he would have married them, but they weren't. They were servants. And then you see the sons of Alabama, and so these are the two different. Remember, he had two wives from the two different nations, two different city states, the Havites and the. What was the other name? Hittites and the Havites. And then, verse 15, these were dukes of the sons of Esau. The sons, and notice these dukes are not the sons of Esau, they're of the sons of Esau. So these will be Esau's grandsons. The sons of Eliphaz, the firstborn son of Esau, Duke Teman, Duke Omar, Duke Zepho, Duke Kenaz. These dukes, is my understanding, they were the heads of the families. Just like Jacob has 12 sons that are the heads of the 12 tribes of Israel, Esau has sons or grandsons that are the heads of their families, and they refer to them, the Lord here calls them dukes. They would have not been kings, because from what I understand, when the Edomites took over the land of what would now become Edom, they did away with the kingdoms, the monarchies, and they set up dukes, similar to how the Lord set up judges in Israel. So they were ruled by the heads of the families. And you see, verse 17, you see there's more listed there. There's more listed in verse 18. And in verse 19, it says, these are the sons of Esau, who is Edom. Again, we're reminded that he is Edom. So the Lord is now, and I believe the reason the Lord is telling us this multiple times in this chapter is because the nation of Edom is being formed here. He wants to remind us that Edom, these men that he's talking about, are the descendants of Esau, who is Edom. They are setting up a kingdom here. And these are their dukes. In other words, the heads of the families. They're not kings, and which was kind of an odd occurrence in that part of the world during that day, because if you remember, the nations that controlled Canaan had kings and princes. They had monarchies. This is not a monarchy. This is a family rule. And some say that this is the first instance of this recorded in any kind of history where there was not a monarchy, that it was specifically family rule. These are the sons of Seir, the Horite, who inhabited the land. Lotan and Shobal and Zibeon and Anna, Dishon and Ezer and Dishan. These are the dukes of the Horites, the children of Seir in the land of Edom. So these are the guys who controlled the land to start with, but they're about to go away. He names some others here. Verse 24, and these are the children of Zibeon, both Aja and Anna. This was that Anna that found the mules in the wilderness as he fed the asses of Zibeon, his father. Now, this was an interesting story. John Gill records this and mentions that one of the old Jewish writers wrote that this man witnessed donkeys and horses breeding and forming mares in the wilderness and began to learn how it was done and learned how to produce mules, and they became popular during that time. So that's the whole reasoning for this part of the story. And then you have all these others, all the way down through verse 30, and it says, these are the dukes that came of Horai among their dukes in the land of Seir. So these were the list of the ones who were there in the land. And then the kings of Edom in verse 31, and these are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom before there reigned any king over the children of Israel. So before Israel ever had a king, Esau's descendants had a king. Or had kings, it says. There were multiple kings. And Bela, the son of Beor, reigned in Edom. And the name of his city was Dinhabah. And understand that they were ruled by dukes first. So don't get confused here. These dukes, these heads of the families, ruled first. But at some point in time, all of a sudden, they've got kings. The monarchy system didn't stay gone for very long. And if you've ever studied much on history, you see a lot of that's because of man's greed. People want to be in charge. There's always a guy that rises up and wants to be in charge over a group of people. And because king seems to be a more prominent name or title, they would appoint themselves king over an area. And so that's what's happened in this. And Bela died, and Jobab, the son of Zeor of Bozrah, reigned in his stead. And Jobab died, and Husham of the land of Temani reigned in his stead. And Hisham died, and Hadad, the son of Bedad, who smote Midian in the field of Moab, reigned in his stead, and the name of his city was Ephith. Trying to see, make sure I didn't forget something. I think I skipped one of the names that I wanted to look at. And I'm not seeing it now. Do you see the name Uz in one of these verses? So I think I might have just skipped over it. That's the one I wanted to talk about. 28? Yeah, I skipped right over it. Verse 28, the children of Dishan are these, Uz and Aran. So Uz, let's back up. You remember where our Sunday school teacher was at this morning? In Job chapter 1. Job chapter 1 and verse 1. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was perfect and upright, one that feared God and eschewed evil. So it's my understanding that this land of Uz, where Job was living, was from. It says he was in the land of Uz. Now, he lived in the land of Uz. Was he from Uz? We don't know. It doesn't tell us. But it appears as though he probably was, whose name was Job. He would have been, or not him, but the land of Uz would have been in these dukes that are talked about in Genesis 36. That's where it got its start. That's where it come from. So there's a tie there to the book of Job, to the man Job. Now, some try to say that this, in verse 34 and back in Genesis 36, that Jobab was the full name of Job. I don't see any, for one, there's no occurrence of that, and it's the wrong time period. Job is a very old book. We know that. Some say it was written before the book of Genesis. But there's no proof linking Jobab to Job as far as it being the same person. And there's nothing. If you notice, Jobab was a king, one of the kings that's listed there. There's nothing said about Job being a king in the book of Job. He was a wealthy man, but doesn't say anything about him being a king. So, but I thought that was kind of interesting. There's a tie there. Now, if you go on through back in chapter 36, you read through verse 37, there's verse 38, and Saul died. Saul was it's not the same King Saul of Israel. It's a long time period, remember. But man by the same name. And then there's Baal-Hanan, the son of Achbor, reigned in his stead. Now, this is one of the first, maybe the first, I didn't get a chance to research it, but this name Baal-Hanan, remember the name Baal in the Old Testament is a very popular name. It's mentioned in different forms in the Old Testament. It always referred to someone evil, didn't it? Some say, and this is a study that I would like to do sometime. I've mentioned this before, but on the name Baal, because of its prominence in the Old Testament, I think there's a lot there to study. But was this man worshipped? We don't know. There's not much said about him right here. But it's very possible. I mean, they were a, even though they were just a generation or two removed from Abraham and Isaac. They had strayed from God in a lot of things, so it's very possible. And remember, as Esau had moved into the land of Edom, Edom would become Edom, it wasn't Edom before. What was there before he arrived would have been a pagan society. And so it's very possible that this man could have had something to do with the beginning of that name, Baal. So we'll look at that for another time. But anyway, if you go on down through these verses, you see some more of the lineage there. And in verse 40, and these are the names of the dukes that came of Esau, according to their families, after their places, by their names, Duke Timnah, we'll go on down through verse 42. These dukes are listed. These are, again, heads of the family. Duke Magdiel, Duke Aram. These are the dukes of Edom, according to their inhabitants in the land of their possession. He is Esau, the father of the Edomites. So God, we wonder sometimes, why does God take time out? Like, he spends a whole chapter here talking about Esau and his descendants, the Edomites. What was the purpose in all this? Well, if you're a student of biblical history, all this ties into a lot of the things that happened later to the nation of Israel. It's basically just telling us what happened to the other side. What happened? You know, we got Jacob's story. The rest of the Bible is going to cover Jacob's story, isn't it? Jacob and his descendants, Israel. Israel and his, remember, Jacob's name has been changed also. God changed it. Jacob's name to Israel. So the rest of the story of the Bible is about Israel. We get one last look at the other side of the family, Edom. And if you turn to Jeremiah chapter 49, Jeremiah 49, and, well, pages are sticking together. Jeremiah 49, verse 7. We'll start in verse 7. Concerning Edom. Now, this is, the Lord was giving a prophecy of what was going to happen to these nations that were around Israel. When Nebuchadnezzar came and overthrew Israel, or overthrew Judah, I should say. Israel had already been taken. When he overthrew Judah and besieged Jerusalem, then he went out and began to take over the nations around Israel. And the reason was because God had prophesied that those nations that had sat back and not helped Israel, those who had laughed at Israel and had scoffed at Israel for what was going on, and because they knew that, if you remember the story that we studied in Jeremiah, these other nations knew that the God of Israel was the one that was causing these things to happen to Israel. They knew how powerful he was, and they knew that Israel had turned their backs on their God, and now it was their turn to pay. So they didn't think that anybody would bother them. They thought that Nebuchadnezzar was going to take care of Israel, and then that was going to be the end of it. Well, that wasn't the end of it, because they, and especially Edom, remember, Edom being the brother to Israel, should have had more at stake here than any of the rest. Concerning Edom, thus saith the Lord of hosts, is wisdom no more in Teman? Remember the name Teman? That was one of the dukes, wasn't it? Is counsel, and it's my understanding that Teman, at this time in Jeremiah's day, Teman was the capital of Edom. Is counsel perished from the prudent? Is their wisdom vanished? Flee ye, turn back, dwell deep, O inhabitants of Dedan, for I will bring the calamity of Esau upon him, and the time that I will visit him. He mentions Esau here. Why? Because Esau was the father of the Edomites. If grape gatherers come to thee, would thou not leave some gleaning grapes? If thieves by night, they will destroy till they have enough. But I have made Esau bare. I have uncovered his secret places, and he shall not be able to hide himself. His seed is spoiled, and his brethren and his neighbors, and he is not. So the Lord's telling Edom here, if grape gatherers come to thee, would they not leave some gleaning grapes? If anybody else was to come to you in need, you'd help them. But not Israel. Why? Because they're bitter enemies. Remember, their bad blood goes all the way back to Esau and Jacob. Leave thy fatherless children. I will preserve them alive, and let thy widows trust in me. For that, thus saith the Lord, behold, they whose judgment was not to drink of the cup that assuredly drunken, and art thou he that shall together go unpunished? Thou shalt not go unpunished, but thou shalt surely drink of it. They've grieved the Lord greatly, haven't they, about what they've done. For I have sworn by myself, saith the Lord, that Bozra shall become a desolation, another city that's mentioned back in Genesis, a reproach, a waste, and a curse, and all the cities thereof shall be perpetual waste. Again, in Jeremiah's day, now the practice is when an invading army comes in, they're going to destroy everything. Everything's going to be laid waste. The cities are going to be torn down. These kings and Nebuchadnezzar and the ones in his day and even after him, they didn't care about these places. These weren't their people. They didn't plan on living there. They took captives, remember? They took people back. They either killed them or they took them back as captives. They destroyed everything. Why? Because they didn't want their enemies to rise up again. It was a way of keeping your enemies at bay, and you know, the people, once they took them back to Babylon, they integrated them into the Babylonian society the best they could, and they had no desire to go back. And plus the fact, if they knew, as they were being taken captive, they knew that everything had been destroyed, why would you want to go back? That was a deterrent to keep them from wanting to go back. Verse 14, I have heard a rumor from the Lord, and an ambassador is sent unto the heathen, saying, gather ye together, and come against her, and rise up to the battle. For lo, I will make thee small among the heathen, and despised among men. Thy terribleness hath deceived thee, and the pride of thine heart. O thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, that holdest the height of the hill, though thou shouldest make thy nest as high as the eagle, I will bring thee down from thence, saith the Lord. It doesn't matter where you go, I'm going to get you. The army that I've sent is going to find you. It don't matter where you try to hide, how high or how low you go, they're going to get you. Also, Edom shall be a desolation. Everyone that goeth by it shall be astonished, and shall hiss at all the plagues thereof, as in the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, the neighbor cities thereof. They were close to the area where Sodom and Gomorrah had been, in the Valley of the Plains, the once most fertile part of that part of the world. No man, saith the Lord, no man shall abide there, neither shall a son of man dwell in it. Why? Because everything is going to be destroyed. Again, the whole ecosystem is going to be changed. No man will be able to live there. Up until this point, the descendants of Edom have had it good. They've had a very fertile place to live. They could raise their crops, their animals. They had cities. Behold, he shall come up like a lion from the swelling of Jordan against the habitation of the strong, but I will suddenly make him run away from her. And who is a chosen man that I may appoint over her? For who is like me, and who will appoint me the time? And who is that shepherd that shall stand before me? Therefore hear the counsel of the Lord. He that hath taken against Edom and his purposes, that he hath purposed against the inhabitants of Teman, surely the least of the flock shall draw them out. Surely he shall make their habitations desolate with them. The earth is moved at the noise of their fall, at the cry, the noise thereof was heard in the Red Sea. It's going to be heard all over the world what's happened to Edom. It's going to be a great catastrophe. Behold, he shall come up and fly as the eagle and spread his wings over Bozra. And at that day shall the heart of the mighty men of Edom be as the heart of a woman in her pangs. So we'll stop there with that reading. But so Edom is no more. The nation of Edom is no longer there. Like the other nations, Moab, the Ammon, Philistia, Edom was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, or destroyed by God through Nebuchadnezzar, we should say. God's the one that destroyed them. Now back in chapter 36, to end this for this morning, Genesis chapter 36, according to verse 43, according to their habitations in the land of their possession, he is Esau, the father of the Edomites. God, we saw in Jeremiah where God finally gets or serves justice on Esau and his descendants. Are there any descendants of Esau today? Well, it appears as though what we read there in Jeremiah, that the women and the children, at least part of them, were saved. They were taken back as captives. Some things I've been reading recently on that part of the world, because of what's going on over there now, there's all kinds of mixed tribes over there. The Palestinians that are there now are one of those. They're mixed with all the other tribes that have been over there in the past. They claim that they're partly of the Edomites, of the Moabs. There's some Jewish that's been mixed in with them. There's some from Saudi Arabia, some from other parts of that part of the other nations of that part of the world. They're a mixed race of people. For them to say that they have a right to the land of Canaan, or the land of Palestine, as they refer to it, is wrong. They have no true claim to it. Only Israel does. And God is the one who gave it to Israel. Now, we know in our study on the end times things, it's not Israel's time yet to occupy it. They had an opportunity at one time to occupy it, and they didn't occupy all that God gave them. And plus, they sinned against God, and he took it from them for a time. But the promise is still there. They're still going to inherit it. And that is yet to come. So we'll stop there for this morning.